Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're on our amateur special, our home cook special, where we have three local passionate cooks coming in to give a little bit different perspective that Cindy and I are talking to. The second of whom is Dan Brown. Dan, nice to have you here today.
Thanks. Dan. Nice to be here.
We're very glad you're with us. This is exciting.
For me too.
Good. Good.
And Dan is a retired professor, so I'm ready for him to ask us all the questions.
Uh-oh. You know, that's
the question you had asked, what was intriguing about the letter that you'd written, I love bullet points.
Concise.
Yeah, it's easy to read.
To be very personally.
For those of us in the restaurant
business,
it works.
Personally frank, with the short attention span that we have.
Right.
No, it's like, oh.
Bullet points.
Pick it. You got it, you know. Your perspective, the most, we had a lot of exciting letters from listeners, and the most exciting ones, honestly, were ones where people had very different perspectives, but mostly that they were passionate, that they were excited about it. So what makes you passionate about food, about cooking?
Well, I have to put it in the context of my life, and I think maybe cooks are born, because I can remember very distinctly the flavor when I was in about the second grade, and I was in a daycare system where they made food. And they made some dish with liver, and it made a gravy from that, and that was served on rice. I couldn't eat that liver, but to this day, I love that, and that memory, I can remember it very clearly.
I bet you can. That's a little aggressive. A second grader eating liver?
Am I the only man in America that likes organ meats?
Well, not when you're in the second grade.
I always liked it.
No, I don't like it. I don't like it. But the gravy is distinctly different than the meat. Anyway, and then I think, you know, I've always had an interest in food, it seems. But I think the thing that sort of kicked it over was... besides the flavor, of course, was the appearance. And as, you know, as our nation has grown more cognizant of that, there's more and more of that out there, and you begin to see what people are producing. And it's inspiring. You know, you see it.
Well, you're an artist.
Exactly.
And, of course, the visual aspect of it is going to be extremely appealing to you.
Yes, you do.
Indeed.
And that's very helpful.
When you were born to be a cook, because of your ability, you know, you were just telling us you work with sculpture, and my goodness, you know, to be an artist and to work with your hands that way is exactly what a cook needs.
Yeah.
You know, because that's one of the things you judge for a good cook in a professional kitchen is how are their hands. And...
how are their
That's
hands and
gift.
How is their eye?
But you know, the truth is, I think I'm just a cook. You're a chef,
well,
Cindy.
Well, thank you, but I mean...
There is a difference. And the difference, the way I describe it, you make it an art form, right? And I can read a recipe. Do you know what I mean? I mean, yeah, I do some stuff. But really, a good chef makes it an art form. I mean, it goes way beyond just making beef stew, which is what I'm making for tonight. It's dinner.
Very good.
But I like beef stew. But anyway, so that's a big change. I consider myself a better than a cook, but certainly not a chef. You know.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I live, breathe food, and have for over 31 years. I mean, it is my life. And you know, you live, breathe art and
exactly.
teaching. And I understand. You know, and there's that is the difference. And it's one of those things with cooking, like so many things that we all do, the repetition is so important.
I'm sure it's the exact same thing with a sculptor, right?
Sure.
The earlier that they get the experience with their hands, it makes all the difference.
Yeah, you got to pay your dues.
You do. And that's so true about what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you have to start at the bottom. You have to have the patience to go through up the ladder and really learn every aspect of everything in the kitchen. And really, you should start off washing dishes, you know, because that teaches you respect for the most difficult job in the kitchen. I don't care what anybody says. Being a dishwasher is the hardest job in the kitchen.
The chef in our company who is the fastest at producing food was also the fastest dishwasher 15 years ago.
And he, and he's worked in all of our kitchens, you know, and started in mine, and is the chef of one of our restaurants, and he's unbelievably talented.
But it's that like instinct towards motion study that happens for speed. But it's also, I mean, it's also precision. It's also knife skills. I mean, that it's pretty remarkable. And it's one thing to do it where you're doing and you're thinking about it like an artist. It's another thing to think about it. You don't know any other way to do it than the most pragmatic and most efficient way, and you have the eye of the artist.
Oh yeah.
Well, you know, that's and so you have no choice but to do it beautifully.
You're right. I don't have any choice. You know, every time I put out a plate for my wife, she goes, "Oh my."
Oh,
you know?
that's wonderful.
Oh yeah, she's great, and she does all the dishes.
Oh, that's perfect. Perfect.
Nirvana.
Oh, you stay together forever.
You're gonna pay a karmic penalty for that, Dan. You're gonna pay a karmic penalty.
And she likes to do them.
Well, that's great. That way you don't feel badly about it.
Not at all. Give me another pot.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But there is something very therapeutic. I definitely get to the end of my day sometimes, and there's some baking disaster that's happened in my kitchen, and the result may be beautiful, but you know, there's stuff to be taken care of, and it's like, okay, I can clean all these.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else I cannot achieve. This I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of food do you have, a certain type of food that you like to cook at home, or an interest?
I don't, you know what, I've been thinking about that too. I think what my interest is in something new. One thing I could not do as a chef is produce that same dish over and over again. It's just not in my nature. And I'm always looking for a new recipe to try. And usually I look for one that has some sort of a challenge, you know.
Good.
Literally some challenge. It's something I've got to do that I've never done before. And that makes it interesting,
sure.
You know.
And pushing yourself is what makes you a better cook.
Yeah, and some of them are flops, but
that's okay.
You know, yeah,
that's
okay.
Life.
Yeah.
And then maybe you should try and make it again if it was a flop. So that's your opportunity to actually repeat yourself.
So what is the, this is Cindy's going to laugh because these are my kinds of questions. So what is the dish that came out better than you ever expected, that you thought you were going to fail? And what's the dish that you were confident was going to work that was a flop?
I think I even mentioned it on my letter, and that was I can make a Paris Brest. And for your listeners who may not know, this was a dessert that was made to celebrate a bicycle race from Paris to Brest. And it's a circle, a pastry circle, and then it's filled with a praline cream, and then whipped cream, and then almonds and powdered sugar.
Paris Brest, I love so much.
So I knew that was going to be a real big challenge. All because making the praline, et cetera, you know. So, and it came out fine. Although one time I did make it, and I always, you know, you bring it out and present it, and all the guests say, "Ooh,
sure."
So I'm bringing it out, and I tilt, and half of it slid into the sink.
Oh, my God.
Soapy water.
Oh, you're like, no.
I said, "Oh, well, we're going to serve it in pieces." So I just took what was left and that up. And
does it? That stuff happens to everybody.
Oh yeah, I dropped a rolling pin on my foot yesterday. Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you're making a souffle for two people, how many do you make?
Oh, when I make a souffle for two people, I make eight. And that's not only because I want to eat some of them, but also because you never know.
Yeah. And I think something I thought was going to be easy, I made some Chinese dumplings. And I thought, I can make dumplings. And I made them. They came out and I put them up. And they all stuck together. You know, I had like a Chinese dumpling, you know.
Yeah. You had one big mess.
One big dumpling.
A lot of Chinese cooking, you got to manage the sticky.
And then the very same night.
That's awesome.
I was making egg rolls. And I'd made them before, but the recipe called for cabbage. I think you might have said Chinese cabbage, but cabbage. But when I was at the market, I thought, well, this Napa would probably work. It doesn't work.
No.
it turned into mush inside the.
Yeah, you need the really rugged stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you just really need the cabbage.
You can't handle the heat.
Sometimes you just shouldn't try to alter a recipe.
You're right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Like, well, see, and you have a great sense of humor. I mean, you can laugh at yourself, and that's honestly, I'm the same way. I mean, you know, hey, we should just learn and move on. You know, and you have to be able to laugh at yourself and enjoy it.
And folks, it's only food. I mean, it's serious
right,
about
it's
it.
It's not brain surgery. Yeah.
It's just food.
Exactly.
It's just food.
I
mean, I love
attitude.
Doing it. And you know what? I mentioned taking out to the guests. I love that sort of performance in a way. I mean, I love to hear my guests. I guess it's pride.
Of course.
But I love to see, oh, wow. I mean, some people have literally said, this is the best meal I've ever had.
That's so wonderful. And I think, that's very gratifying.
And I think, all right, Dan.
Good for you.
You know, so
that's awesome.
That's, yeah, it's great. It's a wonderful gift to be able to give to your friends. It really is. It's yeah, I love it.
Good
I
for
love
you.
It.
Okay, so when you started cooking, did you teach yourself or did you learn from your, you know, parent or?
My mom was what I would call a good cook of her style.
So what was her style?
Simple. Now, the bad part about my mother's food, although she cooked it, I liked most of the things she cooked, is that she only had about 14 menus. And they just cycled. You know what I mean? So I knew on Friday probably what it was going to be, you know? And if it wasn't that Friday's, it was the next Friday.
It was,
you know,
kind of like the plate of the day.
I mean, I knew what it
plat
was going
de jour.
To be. And you do that for like 17 years. That wears, as a matter of fact, and you won't believe this, she served mashed potatoes every night for 17 years.
Wow.
Some people would be very happy about that.
Well, I wasn't.
I think Luke, our producer, would be very happy
anything.
About that.
It's your mother's fault. This is why you don't repeat anything that you make.
But the interesting thing, though, is, and I think a lot of people would relate to this, regardless of where you arrive at your experiences in life and your culinary knowledge and taste, and I think you still find fond memories about some of the flavors you had as a child. And
of course.
I didn't eat mashed potatoes for about 5 or 6 years, literally. And then, I love mashed potatoes and gravy.
Oh, yeah.
And why do I love that so much is because my mother, when she would cook a piece of beef, it was desiccated. You know,
there's no hope for the animal.
Oh, no. You cook it. It was terrible. Anyway, but.
You started off by saying your mom was a good cook.
Well, she was. I mean, she did a lot of things that were good. Her pork chops were good, you know, and her mashed potatoes were good. And her gravy, oh my. Because, why was it so good? Because what? Where was all the flavor? It was in the pan.
In the gravy.
And so she made gravy with. You can't get gravy like that. I mean,
right.
you have to ruin all your beef to get that gravy. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah. Anybody that made mashed potatoes every night for 17 years, those better have been the best mashed potatoes ever made. I mean, that's talk about perfection and repetition.
She was also one of these people, too. They'd be real salty one night, and I would say, Mom, these are really salty. And she'd say, oh, I didn't know whether I put salt in it or not.
Oh.
Taste it, maybe, you know? But, you know, anyway, I couldn't complain.
So you learned.
So in a way, she was your inspiration.
So we can summarize by saying your mom was an important inspiration in your cooking.
Yeah, in both ways, you know, some of the good things and maybe some of the things to avoid, you know?
So a fun thing to know is how people like to work. Are there tools, instruments? They're like, these are the three things I use every day to produce food.
My chef's knife.
Yeah,
almost every day, and I love, and I keep all my knives real, real sharp.
Good.
And
good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, I keep them real. I bought one of those electric sharpeners things, and they do a great job, actually. Mm. Anyway, I use my chef knife, and of course I bought some cutting boards at IKEA that are very thin plastic, but you can have 5 or 6 of them. So if I'm cutting up some chicken, I just take that one, throw it in the sink, and I can take a fresh one. And they go in the dishwasher. So I use those almost every day. I would tell people who are getting involved in cooking, buy the best tools and equipment you can afford.
I agree.
Don't skimp on that. It just makes your life miserable.
Right.
Well, when you have the right thing, you take care of it. A lot of times you're going to get decades out of it.
Yeah, it really should. I mean, honestly, some pans you should be able to pass on to your children.
My KitchenAid mixer is about, it's older than my son's.
Good.
So it's 30 some years
awesome.
Old. I mean, so.
Oh, I'd like to see a picture of
I
that.
I do not actually think that those are made that way now.
Well, my son told me they aren't made as well as they were. He said there's
no, you should hang on to that.
Yeah, it looks just the same as the one. It hasn't
awesome.
Changed stylistically.
Okay.
But that thing will. Oh, yeah.
I want Tony to ask the question about where would you eat?
Oh, yeah.
If you could go anywhere. I love to hear the answer to that.
That really is a great sort of a. To wrap this segment. So if you could eat anywhere.
In the world?
Yes.
Maybe in the world. Yeah, somewhere that you have been, you want to go to again, somewhere you haven't been. You know, Where is it that you dream about being at the table?
Mm-hmm. I was watching a series called Chef's Table.
Yes, love that series.
Oh, it's wonderful to watch.
So who do you pick?
The very first guy.
Italian.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever his name.
Osteria Francescana.
Have you ever been to Italy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, good. I've been there numerous times. I like it. I really like Italian food. I like the directness of it. You know, it's just with a lot of gusto. They just sort of go right at it. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the flavors are, I think, even better. As a matter of fact, I just learned how to make a puttanesca that sticks to the pasta. I always made them. It's always like running all over the place. And what the recipe called for is that, you probably know this, took all the tomatoes, and you put them in a strainer, and you push down on that, and that liquid comes out. And you take that liquid, and you put it in after you saute your garlic or whatever, and you put that liquid, and you reduce that down until it's very thick.
Good.
And then you don't toss the tomatoes in, then they don't get cooked. They just get warmed through, so and it sticks. You know,
good.
It's not
good
on
deal.
The bottom of the
all
thing.
Right.
So.
All right.
Well, Dan, thanks for coming in with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It was great talking with you.
It was great fun. It was really great fun. Nice meeting you.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks a lot.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on WYPR, we'll have our last amateur passionate chef. ¶¶